numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Friday morning to you. It is a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network, Visa.com, the Visa app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. It's Gil Alexander, it's Kelly Bidlin. Football today on the show. Kelly, I'm setting the over-under on political ads during the 2 hours of this show on the screen in front of me at, 45. I can't hear you in the mic. Or is your mic on? I can't hear you. 45. It's just unbelievable. Overrun. I wonder if every state is like this in Nevada. We have a great show here tonight. This morning, I should say. Matt Brown on football, co-host of VSiN's Final Countdown with Stormy Bonatoni. Nothing but NFL picks from Matt. Adam Burke in studio to talk about all his picks. Baseball today, of course, a makeup game from yesterday between Cleveland and New York, plus the two National League games. So we have a Game 2 in the American League of the Best of 5 Division Series and two National League Game 3s, both series knotted up at one game apiece, talking about the Dodgers and the Padres, and, of course, the Braves and the Phillies. I think Spencer Strider's got the go today now, we're seeing. Chris Velika will join us, the Bear from ESPN's College Game Day. Paul Carr to talk Premier League picks and Survivor with us. Dr. Bob on and on and on. Kelly's got some NBA alternate season win totals. We still don't have you. Okay. Still don't have Kelly. Alternate season win totals with Kelly. Kelly will join us whenever we get it together. He'll be here eventually. As far as the game last night, though, oh, my goodness gracious. Can we start there? Everything it was hyped up to be. All the hype was met. And by hype, I mean this was going to be a disaster. For the second week in a row on Amazon's Thursday Night Football, after the 12-9 Colts win over the Broncos at a field goal fest. The Commanders and the Bears were like, hold my beer. Washington gets it done 12-7 in what has to be the most uninspired win in Washington football history. Congratulations, though. Washington goes to 2-4. Get out of the way, Eagles, Giants, and Cowboys. Here they come. All right, maybe not. 12-7, though, just to go through this game. Just absolute ridiculousness. And I was on the, we were texting with Felica last night. We're like, what was worse, last week or this week? He's, this week is just funny. And Kelly was saying he was literally laughing out loud for this game. But let's go through it again. First half, 4th-1 at the Washington 21 for the Bears. 5:12 left in the first quarter. It looked like the Bears were going to draw first blood in this game. Justin Fields gains 2 yards. First down, 4 plays later. Fields pass batted up in the air by F.A. Obata, picked by Jonathan Allen, and the first Bears threat is squelched. Remember in these box scores, how many times do we say it? All you need to know is the turnovers. Now you could probably figure out who wins these games. That's the first Bear threat, squelch. Then, later, Khalil Herbert, 64-yard run. This is the second quarter now, and the Bears' first play from scrimmage in the second quarter. Sets up a first and goal from the Washington 6. Surely the Bears are going to score from here. And then a 12-man on the field penalty for Washington. Makes it first and goal from the 3. Herbert stopped for no gain on first down. Then Fields overthrows a wide-open Ryan Griffin in the end zone on second. Just airmails it over his head. Should have been a touchdown. Then Fields gets 2 yards on third down. It's 4th-and-goal from the 1. Herbert stuffed. Stuffed at the line of scrimmage. 0-0 it remains. In a related note, I should point out that Justin Fields is 6'6" tall, 240 pounds. Just sneak him! What are we doing? Halftime, Washington 3, Chicago nothing. Unders are looking coasty, as they were all night. Kelly had an under.
No, they
are. He's back there, I promise you. You hear that, ladies and gentlemen? Oh, my God, we'll get it together. Wentz, 5 of 14 in the first half. 5 of 14. He completed 5 forward passes for 57 yards. No touchdowns, no picks. He was sacked twice. 88 total yards of offense for Washington, who, again, were the team that was in the lead at the half, 3-0. Fields, for his part, was 7 of 14 for 89 in the first half. No touchdowns, 1 pick. He was sacked 3 times. 6 carries for 32 yards. The score at halftime, sacks, total sacks in the game, 5. Total points in the game, 3. It's one of the worst halves of football you'll ever see in your life. Second half, though, surely it would pick up. Fields to Pettis, 40-yard touchdown, 7:16 left in the third quarter, and the Bears have the lead, 7-3. Justice after they got stuffed on 2 red zone and 1 goal-to-go situation in the first half. 7-3 Bears. Now it's a 7-6 game after Washington gets a field goal. And Washington has a Washington has a 4th-and-6 at their own 37, That was after the Commodes tried poorly to draw the Bears offside. Remember, they had a fourth and one at their own 42. Looked like they might go for it, down 7-6. Instead, they take the delay, have no shot at drawing them offsides. And the biggest play of the game, Tress Way then punts, and it's muffed by Velus Jones Jr., recovered by Christian Holmes at the Chicago 6-yard line. Again, turnovers, all you need to know. That's how Washington won this game. Simple. And the stuffs, of course, but one of the stuffs was a turnover, as you remember. Two plays later, after the muffed punt, Brian Robinson in from 1 yard out. Two-point conversion is a miserable failure after that, but it's still 12-7 Washington. By the way, that two-point conversion was essentially me, Kelly, and everybody downstairs, like we were 12 years old, being like, okay, everybody just go out to pass. We'll figure out something. Carson Wentz just throws it into the stands. I guess it was intended for Curtis Samuel. It remains 12-7. This game was just a comedy show. Ensuing drive, Bears end up with a 4th-and-16 at the Washington 48 after a delay penalty of their own. Very questionable that they went for this. 4th-and-16.
Punt the ball!
You know how Kelly feels about it. Kelly said he should punt the ball, if you caught that. I would agree. You still had the 2-minute warning. You had all your timeouts left. They decided to go for it 4th-and-16, again, down 12-7. What happens? Of course, they don't get it. You got to make the assessment there, even if we don't get it. I mean, if Washington stops us there, even if Washington doesn't advance the ball, we, the Bears, get pinned deep. Well, instead, they got bailed out, it seemed like, at the time, because Washington did advance the ball and got into field goal range. And then Washington, very questionably, 4th-and-4 to Chicago 30 with 1:54 left, they opt for a Joey Sly 48-yard field goal attempt, wide left, and the Bears have new life. Again, down 12-7. First play from scrimmage. Jonathan Allen strip sacks Justin Fields, but David Montgomery recovers, and you're like, oh, no. I know it's about to happen. And it looked like it did. Three plays later, Justin Fields runs for 39 yards, and it's a first and goal at the Washington 5 with 52 seconds left. All they got to do is punch it in from 5 yards out. What could go wrong? First and goal at the 5. Fields, 1 yard run. Second and goal at the 4, 45 seconds left. Field, pass batted down by James Smith-Williams. Third and goal at the 4, 42 seconds left. Fields pass intended for Dante Pettis in the end zone. Floated, just enough time for Derek Forrest to get there and break it up. And then fourth and goal at the Washington 4 with 35 seconds left. Fields pass intended for Darnell Mooney in the corner. By the time he gained control, Mooney that is, he's short of the goal line, defended by Benjamin St. Juste. By the way, they ruled that a reception. I'm not sure that was even a reception. But there was no point because we were short of the goal line anyway. So the question is moot, and Washington wins it 12-7. The most uninspired win in franchise history, once again. But they'll take it. Win is a win. And for dumb trend lovers, Carson Wentz is 7-0 on Thursday nights. That's outstanding. Oh, man. Wentz for the game, 12 for 22 for 99 yards, ladies and gentlemen, 99. No touchdowns, no picks. He was sacked 3 times. Only 14 first downs for Washington. They were outgained 392 to 214. They were 2 of 11 on third downs, but +2 in turnovers. It's all you need. Fields ended up 14 of 27 for 191, touchdown, 1 pick. He was sacked 5 times, 12 carries for 88 yards. How the Bears lost that, my goodness. And I got to give a shout-out to the Amazon post-game panel. They do a tremendous job. Carissa Thompson and that crew are awesome. And I'm talking about Richard Sherman, Tony Gonzalez, Andrew Whitworth, Ryan Fitzpatrick. They were great. And Ryan Fitzpatrick, who we talked about when he sort of assessed Tua Tagovailoa earlier this year, like, here's all the things he doesn't do well, so he's got to be elite when it comes to accuracy. And he actually is very, very, very good when it comes to accuracy. So as long as Tua can be that, he will be an effective quarterback in the NFL because can't really scramble well, doesn't have particularly great speed, isn't necessarily strong to break tackles. Well, in breaking down Justin Fields, Ryan Fitzpatrick, very straightforward and honest about it, sort of saying, like, look, he's not these elite players. He's not Patrick Mahomes. He's not Aaron Rodgers. Basically saying he's got to look in the mirror and say, what I am is an elite runner. The conundrum is that Justin Fields may know that himself, but offensive coordinator Luke Getsy doesn't seem to Getsy, if you know what I mean. Luke Getsy is trying to... I used to say this about Joe Gibbs on the show all the time. Sorry, I had to wedge Joe Gibbs in the conversation. But what made him a great coach? He tailored his game plan to the personnel he had. won three different Super Bowls based on the skill sets of the personnel he had on those three different occasions. A lot of these arrogant NFL coaches don't seem to get that. Luke Getsy doesn't seem to get that with Justin Fields. Do things that make him successful. Roll him out. Make him see the field from outside of the pocket. Don't keep him in the pocket. And the other point that Andrew Whitworth made, which I think was so great, is keep in mind, talking about GM Ryan Poles, talking about head coach Matt Eberflus here, Justin Fields is not their guy. They didn't draft him. And so you wonder with the Bears if that's just going to color over everything as long as Justin Fields is quarterback. By the way, speaking of quarterbacks, Ron Rivera got a little testy when someone suggested yesterday that Dan Snyder was actually behind the acquisition of Carson Wentz.
Honestly, I'm gonna speak my mind for a second. It's been hard. It really has. You lose four games in a row, and everybody wants to get you, you know, just get on you. And they've played their asses off. They have. They played their asses off for everybody. They come out and they show up. They work hard. All right. They don't complain. Okay. They hear all the stuff and they got to deal with it. I get that. And I respect them for that because they're resilient. They come back. Everybody keeps wanting to say I didn't want anything to do with Carson. Well, I'm the guy that pulled out the sheets of paper, that looked at the analytics, that watched the tape in the freaking when we were at Indianapolis, okay? And that's what pisses me off, because the young man doesn't deserve to have that all the time. I'm sorry, I'm done.
It's very, very upset that he's not been given credit for the acquisition of Carson Wentz. I'd have been the guy who was like, how do you feel about Taylor Heineke, though? I'm very curious as he's walking out of the room. Hey, there you are. Kelly Billen, everybody's joined the show.
Hey!
All right, well, Kelly will join us for the rest of the show, including his NBA alternate season win totals. Dr. Bob next, though, with, I'm sure, a very thorough dissertation on a pick in college football, maybe beyond. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds, specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open an account. Start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin on a numbers game here. A couple other notes from the game last night. Justin Fields pressured a total of 18 times per ESPN stats and information, tied for the most in a game in his career. He's now been pressured on 46% of his dropbacks this season, the highest rate of pressure a quarterback has faced in the first six games of a season since ESPN began tracking pressures back in 2009, and he re-aggravated his shoulder injury in the loss. Fields, quote, I'm hurting. Hurting pretty good. That Commanders defense was just crushing him all game. So there's that. We get tweets at Beating the Book, and one of these tweets is great because it points out a prop bet we briefly touched on. Well, let's just get to the tweets here. This is from Skola, Skola underscore 10. Feels like the NFL is treating Amazon like a pledge, and these dreadful games are their hazing. Cricket Man, your rundown on the game brought back all my pain and suffering. Now I need a tennis pick to soothe myself. All right, I'll give you one. Nuria Parisas Diaz coming up. A little later on.
Wow, okay.
I'm betting tennis the whole time. Nuria Parisas Diaz. We can put that in the newsletter. She's about minus 112. I got her at plus 100 last night, but I'd still play it. Titans Insider. That quote-unquote reception on the final play that you talked about gave Justin Fields the over 13.5 completions prop.
I didn't know that was on the line. That was totally not a catch.
I was so pumped Washington won that I didn't think about that prop because Felica had the 13.5, so I was aware of the prop, but I didn't put two and two together because I was like, I don't think that was a catch.
Wasn't a touchdown, wasn't a catch.
But they were like, yeah, it's a catch, but he was short. Let's just move on. And then Web12-66, the angriest guy in New Jersey, he said, all great coaches do that, Gil. Bill Parcells did it with Jeff Hostetler. You're right. He then goes on to add, because he's the angriest guy in New Jersey, he says, let me know when Amazon goes from $99 down to 99 cents. Maybe I'll buy it then. Dr. Bob joins us, everybody. Bob Stoll at Dr. Bob Sports, drbobsports.com. My friend, somewhere outside of Denver. How you doing, Bob?
Good. Hey, last week, I hope everybody took my advice and waited for at least plus 10 with Oklahoma, with Texas Tech. That line ended up closing at 11. And I think when we got on the air last week, it was Texas Tech plus 9.5. And I said, I think this line is going back to 10. Wait for 10. ended up closing at 11, and they lost by 10. But they should have won the game. I think Texas. I mean, like I said, I said they're going to gain more than 500 total yards, which they did. So, but they didn't win the game against Oklahoma State. But hopefully, people waited for the plus 10 at least, and at least got a push out of that one.
Numbers matter, Bob. Numbers matter.
Yeah.
It's your bro tip for the hour, everybody. Numbers matter. Okay, how many picks do you have today, by the way? Because I have another question I want to ask you, so I want to time this. How many you got today?
Yeah, I just want to do one. Okay. I mean, I don't have a lot of plays this week, so I'm going to give out one.
So before you give that, let me just ask you a question, because you're the perfect guy to ask this. Mark Geiger, who's our in-house attorney on the numbers game here, unofficial attorney of the show, he suggested this, and I think it's a great idea, because I was talking yesterday.
I didn't do it, Gil. I didn't do it.
I'm pretty sure you did, but that's a different matter. What I'm referring to is these fourth down bots that exists in the National Football League, and you're a perfect person to ask this of, I think, which is to say that, you know, there are win probability models in baseball. I adhere to them very strictly because baseball's mechanical. First and third, bottom six, down two runs, two out. Situations are, you know, for hundreds of years, yes, there's different players involved, but it's a much more mechanical sport. When it comes to football, we had a Brandon Staley situation last week. It was a fourth and one in their own territory. They were up 2 points, just over a minute left. They were only up 2 points, and the question was, should the Chargers go for it? Should they not? Should they punt? I was in the camp that said they should punt, but we have some bots, some of these models, ESPN and beyond, that said, nope, Brandon Staley did the right thing. And one of the numbers that they had in there was, and this is the part that I disagree with, because I think there's too many parts in football, meaning that, you know, the Chargers' defense had been terrible all year, really, and that field goal kicking is much more reliable now than it was historically in the NFL. So Cade York's chance of hitting a long field goal is much greater now than it would have been for any kicker 10, 20 years ago. Anyway, my point is, do you subscribe to the veracity of those types of models?
Well, as an analytics person, I think I should, but there's been a couple that I still scratch my head at, where I'm like, I guess that's analytically correct, but, you know, with the clock, how much time's left? I mean, even Washington last night going for two, it's like, well, go up by seven. I mean, there's 5 minutes left, you know, or whatever it was when they scored that last touchdown. I'm like, why are they going for two? I guess they're supposed to, I suppose, based on the chart, but I can understand that early in the game. But as the game gets close to the end, like, yeah, but I think a lot of it's not taking into account how much time is left in the game. Why are you going to allow a touchdown to beat you if you miss your 2-point conversion? You know,
I'm glad to hear that answer from you, because you adhere to the numbers as closely as anybody and sort of subscribe to that kind of thing. But just the fact that you have some doubt in them makes me feel better, because one of the numbers in this, I'll just cite the fourth down bot one that I cited yesterday. They said that if the Chargers, in the specific case that I'm talking about, failed to make the first down, they still had a 60% chance of winning that game. And that just makes no sense to me. So hearing that from you makes me feel better, just because I just realized that, you know, that if you also have doubt, then it's okay for the rest of us too, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I just think there's a component of time left in the game that I think is being lost somewhere, and I don't know the specific situation you're talking about. I'm not exactly sure of, so I don't know time was left in that game.
They supposedly factor in the time, but I even think that doesn't work out for them. All right, we got 4 minutes, and I know how you like to be thorough, so let's get your pick. What do you like?
Thorough is the word. I bet this early in the week, the under in the Jets Green Bay game, I bet it at 46.5. It's now down to 45, but I still like the under here. Aaron Rodgers is not throwing the ball deep very well, and he just doesn't have the receivers to get open down the field, so they're going to the running backs a lot. Jones and A.J. Dillon have 31 targets combined, but the Jets are really good defending running backs. They're seventh in the league, allowing just 4.6 yards per target to running backs. So I think this matchup where Green Bay is sort of forced to throw underneath, and that's one thing that Jets do well defensively, is defend the running backs. I think that matchup's not going to work for Green Bay's offense, and I just don't think they have an advantage over anybody's secondary going down the field. So I think they have a little bit of a problem moving the ball. They might try to run the ball a little bit more, but Jets aren't bad against the run. So that's going to be an issue. You know, as far as the other side of the field, you got Zach Wilson. He holds on to the ball a long time. He tends to take a long time to throw. And last, he didn't get punished last week by the Dolphins because the Dolphins don't really have a great pass rush. But last year, Wilson was 32nd in the league in sack rate. So he gets sacked a lot. And I think, you know, holding on to the ball is not going to be a good idea against Green Bay. You know, Rashawn Gary is going to get to the quarterback. Jets right tackle terrible. And Gary's second in the league in pass rushing efficiency. So I think Wilson's going to get sacked a lot. New York probably go to, you know, they like to go to their running back as well. Breece Hall's having a nice year out of the backfield catching balls, but Green Bay's defense allows just 5 yards per target to opposing running backs. I don't think that's going to work. I just think this is going to be a really conservative game plan on both sides, and what they're trying to do is not necessarily going to work for them. So I think each team is going to struggle offensively. I think Jets will struggle more than Green Bay probably, but I just don't see either team scoring a lot of points here. So under 45 is the play, and the model predicts 42.4. So still some value on the under, and I think the matchups favor the under. So under 45 or more.
All right.
Play with the Green Bay Jets game.
Green Bay and the Jets under 45 is the play. Bob, we appreciate it, and thanks for all your thoughts on the other matter as well.
Yeah, I don't know if they're correct thoughts, but maybe I'm too old. I understand analytics like you do, but it's like sometimes I just think it still scratches my head sometimes.
Yeah, you know? That's exactly how I felt about this. Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it.
All right.
Dr. Bob Stoll, Dr. Bob Sports at Dr. Bob Sports on Twitter. And that's like, I brought this up before, Kelly, this in sort of comparison. You ever see the Woody Allen movie Annie Hall back in the day?
No.
This is the old movie, like 1975. But there's a famous scene there. And Woody Allen, super neurotic. That's kind of his thing. That's his brand. But there's a scene where he's in a line waiting to buy tickets to go see a movie in a theater. That's how old this movie is, right? And there's a conversation, like five or six people in front of him, and it's driving him crazy. Like the opinions are so against what he believes. He's like, oh my God, if only I could. And he pulls, it was about a media, the conversation was about media. He pulls Marshall McLuhan, who's this Canadian media critic, from behind the curtain, and he gets Marshall McLuhan to tell these people, he goes, I've heard what you're talking about. What you're talking about is nonsense. And Woody Allen looks into the camera in a very neurotic way, goes, if only life was like this. And that's what pulling Dr. Bob in right there is like. It's like, here you have like, well, it's a model. It must be right. And he's the pioneer of all this stuff. And even he, and basically what he's saying is, yeah, I don't know. It doesn't seem right to him. It crap in, crap out sometimes with these things. So again, for those who adhere to those models, like, yeah, but it was the right thing to do for Brandon Staley. I don't know about that. Think again. All right, we'll come back. Our NFL picks for the weekend. Survivor strategy. We'll do it all next. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Basketball season is ready to tip off, and now's the time to grab your VSiN Pro Basketball Betting Guide with season prep on all 30 teams. Our hoops experts, including Jonathan Von Tobel, provide strategy and advice as well as predictions for conference winners, win totals, playoff teams, and player awards. We also have 5 betting tips for beginning NBA bettors. That's nice. Give yourself an edge this NBA season and get the VSiN NBA Betting Guide by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. Sign up now for just $99 and get access, that is, to everything we do all the way through the Super Bowl. Look at that. Kawhi, playoff PG. Playoff, what do we call him? Playoff Paul? What does he call himself?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sign up today, VSiN.com/subscribe. You're like, yeah.
But don't worry. He said the other day, Gil, that Kawhi's the number one on this team. He's the number two.
It's just
like, no crap, Paul. That's right. What do you think they brought in Kawhi Leonard for?
Oh, man, we're dying. By the way, with tweets, we always say, as long as you're funny, man, we'll read everything. Web12-66, angriest guy in New Jersey, is cracking us up off. He went to make bacon and eggs for Bob's dissertation. It's phenomenal. We love Bob, though. As long as they're winners, man, we don't care. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. By the way, I just want to read this one tweet. This is from Rick Ollier, just making fun of Ron Rivera. He's quoting Ron Rivera. He's like, are you kidding me? I love Carson Wentz. He's great. Riverboat Ron. Hashtag let's ride.
For real.
Okay, we have asking for survivor advice here. Was this a... Oh, yeah. Well, we got survivor advice. Let's just talk about survivor for a second.
Basically, all he's asking about is, can he make it? Wait, hold on. Make it picking on the Commanders.
Yeah, he wants to know if he can just pick on certain teams
Commanders,
the rest
Panthers,
of the year
and Bears,
and make it to the end. I don't know. I mean, it's like,
mean, I don't know, but that is part of it.
Well,
right, you know,
right? 2 years ago, we picked on the Jets and the Jags, but it was like you could do that every week, and it was super reliable until it wasn't, right? The Rams lost outright as 17-point home favorites in Week 14. If you can hear it in my voice, you know I was part of that.
Yep.
So, you know, I'll answer that the opposite way, which is, and by the way, let's give credit to the person who asked this, who had three entries in the DK Survivor Contest. It's Trenton Stanhope. Trenton Stanhope. Sounds like a soap opera name. You know, on the Megapod, on the Beating the Book Megapod, which we had Las Vegas Chris on yesterday, one of the two final questions, Kelly, is always, which of the big favorites is the most likely to lose outright, in your opinion? And for years, there were weeks where we would ask that question, and people would be like, well, you know, none of them are going to lose. We're talking about like 6.5-point favorites or greater.
Right.
None of them are going to lose, but since you asked the question, here's my answer. Well, yesterday we're asking it, and this has kind of been the case this year. It's literally the opposite now. You have confidence in none of them. You're mm-hmm. like, any one of these teams can lose. And so that's sort of the opposite way of answering this gentleman's question, which is, I don't think you can pick on a team and rely on it every week.
So, I'll spin that forward to an example, because I think last week's Bears-Vikings game, right, might be the perfect example of what you could get out of this Bears team and this Vikings team
yep.
all season long, right?
Perfect example.
First half of that game, the Vikings look like the most dominant team in the NFL, and the Bears look like one of the worst things you've ever seen. And then all of a sudden in that second half, the Bears will start to look a whole lot better. Meanwhile, as normal Kirk Cousins and Vikings teams go, they disappear, and that game becomes a lot tighter than you certainly thought it was going to be mid-second quarter.
It's a great example. Absolutely.
Having said that, the Panthers are terrible. I think you could I think you could fade them almost all the way.
Well, let's talk about that. Here are your survivor candidates, you know, the biggest favorites on the board week six. By the way, I did not include the Eagles in this because I actually like the Cowboys plus the points, which we'll get to momentarily. And I think there's plenty more opportunities to use the Eagles in subsequent weeks. Their schedule is just as easy as it gets.
Yeah, it really is.
So Niners, they are on the road at Atlanta. Atlanta's just scary enough where I don't want to touch the Niners here. Now, you probably won't use the Niners again until after Thanksgiving, by the way. So if you like have a hankering to use them and you're going to miss using them, now would be the time. But I'm going to save them. I'm not going to play the Niners. That's just road, Atlanta, just scary enough.
They had to stay out east, right? This Niners team, I still have my own questions about, at least offensively. So, yeah, I'm with you. I wouldn't play that one either.
Now, the Packers, I've used them. So I can't use them in mine. But the Packers, you know, this is probably the last home opportunity to use them till the last game of the season if you only like home games with teams, if that's your thing. I don't know. You trust the Packers against the Jets?
No. So like, there's,
I'm so glad I don't have to consider them.
So that's the one. Like, if I was in your spot, I'd be glad you don't even have to yep. think about them, because otherwise I think you do have to consider them. Like, the possibility of that outcome of the game, Gil, like 90% in my mind is this is the kind of Green Bay bounce back spot, hammer the Jets into the ground. But like, they're coming back from London. We've seen this offense struggle. Jets looking a little better every week with Zach Wilson in there. I wouldn't want to have to consider it.
Ravens are on the road. They're taking on the 4-1 Giants. I mean, I'm not going to touch that because, by the way, that line is up to 6. Why is that so big?
Don't know.
Like, I like the Ravens, but 6 is a lot. Ravens, you have a lot more home game opportunities coming up. Home Carolina, home Atlanta, home Denver, home Pittsburgh. I think you should save the Ravens for one of those. At least that's how I'm playing that. Then there's the Buccaneers. The Buccaneers still have both Carolina games coming up. Speaking of Carolina, but you get them here as 8.5-point favorites, 8-point favorites on the road at Pittsburgh. Should you play the Bucs here? Pittsburgh has a lot of secondary injuries. Minkah Fitzpatrick hasn't practiced, limited practice, I don't know, but throughout their secondary, they got problems. It's one of those things with the Bucs, even though you have those Carolina games in front, that's like, that might dissuade you from playing them, but at the same time, do you take a chance on them here?
Look, I think this would be my second favorite on the board that you have that you have up of your options. So I think if you're stuck, I don't think it's a bad one. I have them tied into teasers. I think they'll cruise in Pittsburgh. But you're right. You'd ideally like to save them because of the Carolina Panthers existing, which leads us to our next team.
The Rams, who are the biggest favorite on the board, double-digit favorites at home against those Panthers. But God, the Rams are bad.
But that's the point, right, Gil?
Right.
They're bad.
Yeah.
They're bad, and I I would want to get them out of the way before I got to think any more further down the line about how bad this Rams team might be.
So this is, again, this is what makes Survivor so fascinating. So that's what's going on in your head. Several things. And if you're in Circa specifically, I know not everybody's in Circa Survivor, but if you're in Circa specifically, there's a Christmas consideration with the Rams. If you're into the $7 million bonus, that extra million bonus, you save the Rams. Again, that suggestion that person should get the bonus for playing both the Rams and the Bengals rather than avoiding them is still the best suggestion. But that's what you have to weigh. Do I care about Christmas as having them as an option? Because they might not even be good then, and I wouldn't play them anyway. Do you care about the bonus versus how I play Survivor? I usually avoid the teams that I know are going to be the most picked teams. But yet, do I want to get them out of the way, just what you said, so I don't have to worry about them later?
Also, what are we, Gil, what's the bonus in Starka? What is it? You get an extra million if you don't?
Six or seven.
What, it's $6 million!
What do you need the seventh for?
Like, dead serious, though. Who's sitting around complaining about $6 million?
I thought the same thing. Yet, last year, all those guys at the end were playing for the $7 million. So, yeah. Other two picks. Chargers are Monday night. That line keeps coming down. Chargers. Boy, talk about a team you can't be comfortable with. Chargers have a home game against the Broncos this Monday night. They also have a home game against the Seahawks next week. So you may want to use them next week instead of this week. Depends how you feel about the Broncos and the Seahawks. And then I just threw one extra in there because I have a bet on the Cardinals. They're on the road at Seattle. I'm like, well, if you wanted to do the contrarian thing, that might be the team you go with.
I like the more gutsy options on here of the Ravens and Cardinals that you submitted them, because I actually think I would lean with picking one of those over something like the Niners or the Packers even. I think I would rather ride with the Cardinals or Ravens, as weird as that sounds.
Let me just tell you this. At the beginning of the week, I was like, I think I'm playing the Rams and the Chargers. Now I'm like, am I really going to take the Bucs and the Rams? I have two entries. Am I really going to play the two biggest favorites? I might. I don't know. Friday morning, I still don't know.
I think if you got the Rams available, I think you use them and get them out of the way.
I think I might.
I'm not losing to the Panthers. I don't think they're losing to the Panthers. That team is terrible.
It's not like the Rams haven't gotten me before. All right, and here are the picks. These are the bets that I've actually made in pocket already this week, a couple of which we've just described. Bengals was the one that I couldn't believe for guessing lines. Couldn't believe I had them as -3.5 favorites. They're still -2. Even -1.5's out there in the Bengals game here. So I've got the Bengals -2. I did take the Cardinals -2.5 on the road against Seattle. I grabbed the Cowboys plus the points. 6 points still is too much. I know it's Cooper Rush. Still it's too much, in my opinion, against Philly. That Cowboys defense is epic. And then the Colts, I know. I'm just going to run my head into a wall with the Colts with my pre-flop convictions on them. But I am laying the 2 points with the Indianapolis Colts.
So I
this
guess
weekend.
That is the one we are kind of heads up on, because I do have the Jags tied into a teaser with the Bucs. Yeah, that's a game of, look, I think these are two teams with their problems right now, but I will take 7.5 points with the Jags, who I don't know. At least I think I have a better idea of what the Jags are right now, Gil. Like you said, the Colts, I'm like, I still don't really know who they are. Bucks Steelers under 43.5. Look, there's 45s out there right now, so you can get a much better number than I did. That market went the wrong way on me. That was an opening lines bet for me. Still like the under in that game, though. We haven't seen a ton of offense, you know, from the Bucks, and I think the Steelers are going to still continue to struggle with Pickett getting used to things back there. Vikings laid the 3. Still don't understand why this line hasn't risen more. Whatever. I'm going to live or die with that one. Browns laying the 2.5 and Bengals money line. I am on.
You like the Bengals too, yeah. Prove us wrong, Saints.
Yep.
Prove us wrong. Nice money line price you got there.
Yeah, that was on the opener. And that's, hey, Skylar Thompson, you beat me. Fine. Take my money.
Talking about the Vikings game. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Paul Carr on the other side. He's got Premier League picks. We'll talk some football with him. Our football, that is, as well. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Attention, BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Well, here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when you sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Let me explain. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Then, once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager's settled, bingo, bango, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement at BetMGM and get a $50 bonus. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable site credit. Site credit expires in 30 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi and Nevada. Pardon me. Skill Alexander, Kelly Bidlin is here as well. Ladies and gentlemen, he's with True Media Networks. He's the host of the Expected Value podcast. He used to work at ESPN back in the day, so has all kinds of stories that he shared with us through the years there. But right now, he's always with us with Premier League picks, going for his fourth straight 2-1. Where's it been? Three straight 2-1 weeks already? Well, I guess I would say four straight 2-1, but hey, why not a 3-0 while we're at it? It's Paul Carr, everybody. How you doing, Paul?
Yeah, doing well, Gil. Yeah, fourth straight 2-1. Well, obviously, we want to go 3-0.
Yeah.
But yeah, just grinding out these 2-1 results every week. We'll take it. It's not always fun, but we'll take it.
Before we get to that, one of the things that I appreciate about you is that you you listen to the show and you live sort of text it with thoughts. So there's a few things. One, you remember that Annie Hall scene with Marshall McLuhan?
Oh, yeah, it was one of my media classes at college. It was a favorite. When McLuhan comes out and he says, "You know nothing of my work."
You know nothing of my work.
I use that line a lot, and rarely do people know what it's from.
And the best is Woody Allen. I wish life, if only life were like this.
Wish life were like this.
Dr. Bob being our Marshall McLuhan this morning. And then the point about, you know, Joe Gibbs adapting his X's and O's to the personnel that he has. And this was the thing, and this is through the prism of last night's game, and this is what, you know, Andrew Whitworth and Richard Sherman and Ryan Fitzpatrick and the whole crew were talking about last night. I've said this about Gibbs. That's why, to me, he's the greatest coach of all time. That's why you win three Super Bowls with three different quarterbacks, none of whom are Hall of Famers. You were saying Don Shula was the same way.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a homer, but I always bring it up because people say, well, he had two Hall of Fame quarterbacks. And yes, but they won a Super Bowl beating the Vikings when Bob Greasy threw seven passes.
Yeah.
And then they were great in the 80s and 90s when Marino was throwing for 5,000 yards. Like,
perfect.
Those teams are about as opposite as you can get, but he adapted once Marino fell into his lap in that 83 draft.
Perfect example. And so the Chicago Bears, with Matt Eberflus as their head coach, but more specifically with Luke Getsy as their offensive coordinator, they seem so intent on, it's almost like they're saying, Justin Fields, you are going to be good at these things, or we're just, you know, or we're going to insist that you make passes from inside the pocket. No, man. As soon as there was an ad lib, or as soon as he got outside of pocket, Washington was helpless.
Yep. But, yeah, when he had that run at the end to get them down to the two or whatever it was, it's just like, wait, where has this been the whole game? You know, and Herbie kept saying it, get him out of the pocket, make something happen. It's very weird to see him, and under center, which you don't see as much in today's NFL.
And there were so many passes. By the way, Carson Wentz, same thing. But there were so many passes of his from inside the pocket that were just makeable passes, right, that he just threw behind, threw over the receiver, was late, he floated it, whatever. And it's just like this insistence on making it, like the arrogance that your way of playing football should apply to every player you ever had. Marty Schottenheimer was the same way too, I would argue, right?
Yeah.
Like, he had one way of playing football and very successful coach, but to a point, right?
Yep.
To a point. And then the other thing before we get to your picks here, which, and I think you're a perfect person to ask of this as well, going back to those fourth down models, your thoughts on those in general?
Yeah, I mean, in general, they're good, and they can do a lot of things that the human brain can't comprehend. I think any good analytics person will tell you that these are starting points. They're, you know, they are generalizations, and I think Harbaugh said this, I think it was earlier, earlier this year. You know, he said something like, it was a two-point decision or fourth down decision. He said, you know, the numbers are pretty even, and we didn't trust our defense, or, you know, our defense had so many injuries, I think is what it was.
Right.
That's why we decided to go for two and end it. And any good analytics person, I think, will say, take these numbers and then apply your coaching brain to them.
Perfect.
Whether it's the way the game flow is going, whether it's our defense stinks, whether it's we're destroying them on offensive line, so picking up the 1 yard should be easy. You know, there's all those things that, I mean, you know, they're averaged out in the model. But when you're applying it to a specific scenario, that's why you have coaches. That's why you have coaches make these decisions.
Thank you. And that's all we're trying to say, because it's amazing. And we were talking about it on the Megapod yesterday. And Wishnev goes off on it because this is really one of his pet subjects, too. It's like, yeah, it's like you can't just, oh, you have a model, it must be 100% right, infallible every time. No.
Yeah.
Brandon Staley should not
have gone. There's a lot of variables.
I mean,
Mike Sando will always say, you know, what if the coach has used every short yardage play he has for the game?
Right.
You know, what if they used all five of them? They don't have a 2-point conversion play left. You know, that changes the math on everything. There's so many variables.
Mike
that
Sando,
I'm sure there's
said
some I don't even think of. Yeah, that's his.
I love Mike
his
Sando.
Thing on any yeah. coaching decision is you don't know what their play card looks like. You know,
yeah.
And it might be different in the first quarter versus the fourth quarter because of plays that you've run, because of injuries, because of whatever. There's so many variables that, you know, I don't even know what some of them are, but that's why the coaches are there. And it's tough. You know, you're trying to do this in the heat of the moment when there's emotions running high. It's not an enviable position.
That's why
you try to think them through in advance and put yourself in a spot where it's a little bit easier to make the call one way or the other.
That's what Mike Pritchard drives home. He's like, man, doing these on the fly, it's tough to make those decisions on the fly like that. All right, Premier League picks on the heels of 3-2-1 weeks in a row. Another three-pack from Paul Carr. What you got?
Yeah, we're starting tomorrow. Taking over 2.5 in Fulham Bournemouth. These are two newly promoted teams. Often you see these games be very cagey because everyone's trying to steal 3 points. But Fulham has really gone at it this year. Offensively, their defense is a little suspect. 8 of their 9 games have had 3 goals, all their games at home. So I think Fulham will come out and go. You know, they're going to try and they're going to view this as a way to get a relatively easy 3 points against one of the worst teams in the league. Fulham's in a good spot to stay up. And Bournemouth's, their attack hasn't been great, but I think Fulham's defense hasn't been great either. So between Fulham going for it and Bournemouth going up against a not-so-great defense, I think we're going to see goals over 2.5, minus 120. I saw at least one minus 115 this morning, so you might be able to find a better price.
All right, and then Sunday we have two marquee matchups, one of which is Premier League, one of which is not. Let's start with the Premier League, Liverpool and Man City.
Yeah, this is one of the games of the season the last few years. Liverpool's kind of a mess, you know? I have a minus 1,000 top four ticket on them from before the season. I don't feel great about it because they're minus 150 now and in 10th place. But they still have the talent, especially on the attacking end. City obviously has all the talent. They're the best team in the league, maybe the best team in the world right now. And I just think we're going to see a lot of goals. So I played over 3.5 plus 120. The last 5 Liverpool City games have had 4-plus goals. I mentioned Liverpool's defense kind of a mess, so I think City will take advantage of it, especially down Liverpool's right side, where Trent Alexander-Arnold is an attacking defender, but teams have not been able to exploit that as much as they have this year. It's kind of odd to see. But a lot of little things have gone wrong for Liverpool this year. They still have the ability to put a goal or 2-3 on the board. I think we're going to see a lot of goals one way or the other here, so over 3.5 at plus 120 is what I played.
All right, and then Real Madrid and Barcelona, or as they say up there, Barcelona, Paul.
Yes. Yes.
We have another over. Is this a triple pack of overs for
you? It is. I don't think I realized it right now. This price is minus 160 for over 2.5, which obviously you're paying a lot of juice. But for this game, I don't mind it. The line is usually a lot closer to minus 200 for 2.5, or if you can find it. These games get weird. You know, it's one of the biggest rivalries in the world. Emotions are as high as you'll find in any matchup. I think you get a decent price because Barcelona's only allowed 1 goal in La Liga in 8 La Liga games this year. But that's pretty deceptive because it's about 6 expected goals. So the team's numbers underneath the surface have been almost identical this year. So I just think stuff's going to happen. You've got Robert Lewandowski on Barcelona. He's scoring goals. Karim Benzema, Vinicius Jr. on Real Madrid. They're scoring goals. So I don't know what's going to happen here. If I had to play a side, I'd lead Barcelona just getting like plus 200 or so. But I just like the over. It's a simple bet, over 2.5, minus 160, because stuff's going to happen. It always does in El Clasico.
Yeah, what times for Liverpool, Man City, and Real Madrid, Barcelona? Are they same time or are they different times?
I don't have it in front of me. Usually the La Liga game is in the afternoon, at least central time or Eastern time. So usually that's later, and the England game's earlier in the day, usually late morning on Sunday.
All right. There's a good NFL game versus this. What do you end up watching in the end?
That's the old double screen experience where it depends a little bit on how the soccer game is going. If it's tight, that gets the big screen. If it's not, then that'll get moved over to the laptop or the tablet or something.
All right. Over Fulham Bournemouth, over 2.5. That is tomorrow. Then Liverpool Man City over 3.5 goals plus 120. Shop around for the price on Sunday. Then Real Madrid and Barcelona over 2.5 on Sunday as well. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it as always, man.
You bet. Have a good weekend.
You too. Paul Carr live texting the show as well, commenting on all that we're talking about. We always appreciate that as well. Pro tip of the hour. Use your NFL ATS bets to help decide on survivor selections. I would argue that you could do it the other way, too. Use your survivor selection sometimes to help decide your NFL ATS. For instance, in my case, Philadelphia's a throwout in survivor because I like Dallas plus the points, that kind of thing. That's your pro tip for the hour. We do one every hour on VSiN across every show, so that means at least 20 every day. They're available for VSiN Pro subscribers only at VSiN.com, where you can sort them by sport and by show. NBA alternate season win totals next.